The reason we want to dismiss is maybe we feel out of control when our kid acts up. Maybe we feel angry at them when they act up. Maybe we feel powerless to solve it. Maybe we feel like a failure that our kid isn't acting the way that we imagined our kids would act.
Hey guys, welcome to the Dads Building Teams podcast, where we chat about exactly that, dads building their family teams. Every week, me and my friend and mentor, Jeremy Pryor, alternate interviewing another father friend of ours about his particular journey as a father, pursuing the call to build a multi-generational team on mission. As always, let us know what you thought of today's episode on social media, at Family Teams, and without further ado, enjoy today's episode.
All right, well, welcome to the Family Teams Fatherhood Podcast. I'm Jeremy. I'm here with my daughter Kelsey and my friend Colin Jones, who just landed on a plane from Seattle to Cincinnati. So I staying with us for a few days, coming to Cincinnati for a conference with a mutual friend and also fellow podcast guest Tim Schmoyer and his awesome YouTube business. So I get to talk to Colin. We've been friends for a long time. I'm excited to talk to him about some family stuff. So before we dive into that, I wanted to share this fathered insight called Pursuing the Heart of Your Most Disconnected Child. So many of my friends are having an unusual number of kids compared to the average family. Colin is one of those. The six kid crew. We have been captured by the high calling of getting to be fathers and the deep meaning in building multi-generational family teams. But as the number of members of your team grows, dads of larger families need to pay very close attention to one specific thing. What is going on in the heart of your most disconnected child? There is a terrible temptation when you have three or more kids, when it's going well with all but one, to subtly blame or discount the feelings of that one struggling child. Be very careful here. Inside of his or her heart very likely lurks the lesson you most need to know and the one you're most reluctant to face. Why is that? The reason is clear if you consider basic team dynamics. Imagine any team that has, let's say, five diverse members and a strong leader or coach. Typically, the style of that coach will really resonate with some of the members more than others. Those team members will begin to really thrive while others will continue to struggle. But it's inevitable that one will struggle the most. Maybe there's something about the coach's approach that just feels really dissonant to that team member. At first, this team member isn't sure how to think about this sense of difference, especially if she sees others enjoying the coach's leadership. Now imagine that there's nothing you can do to ever get off of this team. Year after year, this team consumes a huge percentage of your time, and your place on this team is a huge part of your identity. What happens to this team member? Often they go into an identity crisis, and they begin to see themselves as the anti-team member. Their identity is the one who doesn't fit or doesn't belong, and that's when you see someone becoming the proverbial black sheep of the family. But let's back way up. Long before any of this occurs, there's something every dad can do to work to make sure none of their kids gets even close to adopting this destructive identity. Choose now to regularly identify which one of your kids, at whatever time, you feel most disconnected from, and do whatever it takes to understand what is going on in his or her heart. God has gifted you with a diverse set of team members, and one of them needs something from you that you might be simply weak at providing. This child's greatest need is matching up with one of your biggest weaknesses. They likely can't tell you exactly what that weakness is, but they will show you through their feelings and actions. So first, it's important to accept full responsibility for the weak areas in your own leadership. Sure, the child is going to have their own flaws that contribute to the disconnection, and when you're fully connected with your child relationally, you can address those issues, but make it your first instinct to focus on your own areas of weaknesses. Then it's time to discover what that issue is within you. You need to be crystal clear so you can address it. The more time you spend understanding what is going on in the heart of your struggling child, the more you'll begin to identify how you contributed to the issue yourself. Then make an action plan. This might include learning about this area, but it's most important that you begin to overcome this weakness through a concrete change in behavior. So here's just some examples. I know this has kind of been abstract, but here are some leadership weaknesses that I know were beginning to hurt my kids. And as I've listen to them reflect on their feelings through deep conversation, I've discovered some areas I need to improve. So one area is that I am really, I have a discomfort with directive commands. I don't like people telling me what to do. I don't like directly telling other people what to do. I prefer making vague suggestions. That doesn't work really well with a family team. I've had to embrace the process of bringing my kids together and directly spelling out what needs to be done. Another area of weakness in my leadership is just lack of one-on-one time. I enjoy being alone. I don't like awkward silence, so I would initiate enough one-on-one time with my kids. And now that's had to become a discipline that I do a couple of times a week. And then even fear of spiritual intimacy. Sometimes I'm worried that my kids are drifting, but I can be not excited to find out the truth of how they're really doing. So I've had to make it more of a discipline to ask. Personally, I feel like I'm just beginning to learn how to be a leader. So I have so much farther to go, but I believe that if we stay close to the hearts of every single one of our kids and refuse to give up on any of them, they will help teach us how to become a much better leader and will grow to love us more and more through the process. So yeah, that's been a journey and something that, man, I have this thing in my heart, like I don't want to lose any of my kids. And I think that as that has, you know, you watch families and you watch this dynamic where one of them kind of starts to drift. And when I see a father kind of like write it off, like, well, I'm 3 for 4. I'm like, no, I just don't want that to happen. So this has come out of like, I know, a heart to hope that, you know, does there have to be black sheep? So I'm curious, Colin, yeah, for you, what kinds of things does it stir up as you think about this idea?
Yeah. I mean, multiple things, but, you know, the first thing, well, first off, I feel like it's really important to say I don't claim to be an expert.
Yeah.
I'm just a father, young father, that's kind of in the thick of these kinds of things right now. I'm probably not even heading into, you know, some of the heaviest parts of it, but I think one of the first thoughts I had is that the most disconnected child can change.
Yes. That's not a single identity that one kid gets.
Yeah. I feel like with our kids, you know, at different times, different ones seem to be having some issues in one way or another. So, you know, rather than just saying, well, this is my problem, hopefully no one's saying I have this problem child, but it changes.
Yeah.
There's a line there that really stood out to me. You said, inside of his or her heart very likely lurks the lesson you most need to know and the one you're most reluctant to face. I think what this made me think about is it's really easy as a parent to dismiss a child's actions or feelings and say, oh, well, this child is acting up or just won't fall in line or, you know, is grumpy or must be hungry or tired or, you know, any of these things to kind of dismiss their feelings. And, you know, one thing that like some really good advice I was told by someone when that's happening is to actually stop in that moment that, you know, you're having this interaction with your kid and first stop and ask yourself what you're physically feeling in your body. Become aware of what you're feeling because we want to dismiss it so that we don't feel.
Maybe you're like, there's a discomfort that you're trying to avoid.
Well, yeah, because our bodies are much more connected than we want to think, you know? And the reason we want to dismiss is maybe we feel out of control when our kid acts up. Maybe we feel angry at them when they act up. Maybe we feel powerless to solve it. Maybe we feel like a failure that our kid isn't acting the way that we imagined our kids would act. And so we want to dismiss it, but to actually stop and say, what am I feeling right now? Because what I started to learn about 3 years ago is like, oh, wow, I have a lot more anger than I realized. I didn't think of myself as an angry person because I don't yell. But I had other ways of dealing with it. And when my kids would do, you know, something disobedient, I didn't know how to handle my own feelings. So I would find some way to like dismiss or send the kid off or anything to not have to face what I was feeling. And then the follow-up is actually to help the child become aware of what they're feeling. Because if there's something going on, you know, and our bodies can actually be a big indicator. Like you physically feel different in your body when you're happy, you know, that like if you start, you know, it's not an uncommon practice to journal what you're, you know, I was told to journal like every hour what I was feeling. And I would find if I was like watching a video that made me excited, I was like, oh, wow, I feel like this. When I felt scared or powerless, I would feel a different way. But our kids, you know, basically help them figure out what's going on. And they don't have a maybe a verbal language for it. And sometimes we as adults don't have a verbal language.
Yeah.
But they can become aware of what they're physically feeling and then be like, you know, that as they mature can help them actually be connected to what's going on emotionally, which is connected to spiritually.
Yeah. Yeah, those disconnects are huge. I mean, anybody can imagine like the sort of typical scenario you might have seen where you have a dad who's obsessed with sports and has maybe a son who's like, you know, the star quarterback, and then has a son who's like wants to play the trombone, you know. but there's emotional equivalence to that. You know, there's the, I think that's what you're describing. There are emotions that each one of us want to avoid and some that our kids really need or are feeling or are expressing. And just like the dad who's obsessed with sports and wants to dismiss maybe his musically gifted, you know, son, we might, you know, really be unwittingly punishing or distancing ourselves from certain ones of our children who are feeling certain emotions, are struggling with certain issues that could bring up, you know, hard memories for us, hard things that we've learned coping mechanisms to avoid. And we don't know when we're like sort of cutting them off at the knees. And that's what I meant by, you know, there's something lurking in there that you don't want to face.
Yeah, totally. And so I think one of the keys to unlocking it is actually say, well, what am I feeling right now? You know, I was just talking to a buddy yesterday about this. He's a father of eight.
Oh, jeez.
And, and someone said he has to start writing down. It's like every 2 hours he has to write down, which I've been given the same assignment like 3 or 4 years ago. But he has to write down what he's feeling. He's like, oh, I feel great. Like work's going well. Business is booming. And then he's like, wait, actually, you know, this customer said this thing to me and it was a little bit scary. And that, and he started to become aware of these emotions that I think a lot of us, especially men in our culture, we're told we're allowed to get angry and to, you know, kind of be even killed, and any other emotions other than that aren't appropriate, you know. So men aren't supposed to be scared, men aren't supposed to be you know, sad, and you know, so if we don't face those emotions, we're going to find a way to suppress them, and we're never going to learn some of these lessons, you know, to be vulnerable, emotionally available to our kids, which might be why they're acting out, because we're not emotionally available to them.
There's some kids that that's a very hurtful thing to them. Having a father who, for whatever reason, may be, you know, sort of holding back their heart, their affection. You know, they may have been deeply wounded, or they may have just learned that from parents. And that's just going to affect your kids differently. Some of your kids are going to be like, well, I love my dad anyway. You know, like they'll connect with you their own way. Other kids will be hurt badly by that. And so this phenomenon of black sheep, a lot of times by the time someone gets that label or is called rebellious, it's years after these disconnects have sort of festered. And that's kind of why I really want to warn fathers, like, hey, you know, while your kids are young, or maybe years before that sense starts to grow inside of one of your children, if you made a discipline of just pursuing the one that felt the most disconnected, and like you said, it's kind of a moving target if you have a bunch of kids, you know, that the hard part of that is you just have to keep learning. You have to keep growing. You have to keep realizing, you know, there's a self-awareness you're articulating. You know, this discipline of writing down your feelings is requiring a father to be highly aware of what's going on inside of them.
Cool. I think if we were taught this stuff when we were kids, you know, like I'm saying, if we could help our kids become aware of what they're feeling, you know, if we were to learn this, it would be a very different battle. We'd be battling. And I, you know, I know it's mostly fathers listening, or, you know, but it's mothers too. Like it's really for, I'll just say my family, you know, like for my wife, when I'm working or gone, or even when I'm there and I'm like zoning out or whatever, you know, six kids and chaos, it's really easy to go straight to, you know, anger or like controlling the situation rather than saying, hey, what am I feeling? What's going on in my, you know, my daughter right now, or my son right now.
And those larger family units, sometimes you can kind of, you know, you have to really resist, I think, seeing them as sort of like a group all the time. Like you have to know that, you know, you can lead them like a group or a team, but you also have to, just like a good coach, you know, they think about coaching their team, but then they're also dialing into each member of the team.
Yeah.
And you can't just flip maybe there's emotional reasons why I think sometimes fathers of larger families may start to, you know, just lump their kids together too broadly or something.
So. Yeah. It's really hard. Like, I don't feel like I'm good at this, but it's something I know, like, I need to keep maturing in.
Cool. Well, I want everyone to get to know you a little bit, Colin. Tell us a little bit about your team. What's who's in your family, and tell us a little bit about your background. Where you're from.
Sure. I've got one wife and six kids, and so I got a boy, Elias. He just turned 11, and then I've got five girls. Gabriella turns 10 soon. Leave is 8. Cosette's 6. Annalise, we call her Bobo, is 4. And then Bryn is 2.5.
Awesome.
And she's the baby.
Man.
Always going to be the baby.
So you, and you, when you were growing up, and you were always dreaming of having a large family, right? You were like, this is...
Well, you know, it's funny. A family that you know, the Platters.
Uh-huh.
How many kids?
Yeah, how many do they? I mean, I met Andrew, like, but I don't remember.
4.
Yeah, they have
five.
A slightly larger family.
Yeah, you know, it's a larger family from, you know, I have one brother. But I remember, like, fairly early on seeing them, and they all seemed happy and being like, oh,
yeah, they're a cool family.
I think I want like 3 to 6 kids. Yeah. You know, 6, it was kind of like the impossible, like, well, you never get to 6, but
right.
Apparently we did.
You figured it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd love to hear that journey. Just, what are some points? So as you kind of, you know, at growing up and then beginning to you and Gray starting your family, what are some of the big milestones, or how did your ideas of fatherhood evolve?
Yeah. So my dad didn't have a father. Mm. He had a biological father who denied being his father.
Oh, really? Wow.
And it was like before DNA tests. So he basically said that my grandma slept around and who knows who the father is. So that was like his biological father.
Wow.
And then he had a stepdad who molested him. Hmm. So it was like, he had awful, you know, like,
overcome. Wow.
And just no resources. But miraculously at 27, Christ entered his life, and you know, then he had a heart to become the man he didn't have to his kids. My mom had an alcoholic, womanizing father, so my parents did, you know, the best they could with the resources they had, and in a lot of ways, it's just a miracle, like what they did. And my brother and I always felt loved. My dad was like very generous with his time. He'd coach, you know, sports teams, and you know, they put us in piano lessons, and they didn't make a lot of money, but they put us into a private school because, you know, they wanted to give us that kind of, you know, Christian education. So in some ways I feel like my dad was a better dad than I am, in terms of like he'd wrestle with that, and I'm just like overwhelmed by 6 kids, and I'm just like, I want to sit here with no one touching me, you know. But you know, my dad also wasn't very good at like showing. He would wrestle with us, but he wouldn't like give hugs, or, you know, he wasn't very good at, he would say things like, Colin, you have a natural swing at baseball, but he wouldn't say like, oh, I'm really proud of you, or you know, things like that, I think were hard for him to say. And so my dad had undiagnosed bipolar disorder for most of his life. And so there was a lot of chaos growing up. I always think of my parents as kind of like Old Testament Bible characters.
Yeah.
You know, like my parents, my dad was a Christian school teacher. My parents built a feeding center that like has saved hundreds of lives, like physically saved lives. And they've had a big impact, but you know, there's a lot of chaos and a lot of unhealth there.
There's all that drama that always happens around those Old Testament characters, even though they're doing God's will.
And, exactly. Yeah. Like, man, they have a heart for God, but they're kind of a mess, you know? And there are times, you know, where that would, you know, rear its head. And so, you know, my dad was a very good grandpa, but then he died when my oldest was 2.5. So, I wouldn't say that I was given, you know, if love is like the most important thing, I was given a lot of that, but not a lot of like, I wouldn't say the best tools of, you know, in a lot of other ways by my dad. In some ways, yes, spending time. But so, you know, like I said, I kind of always wanted to have several kids, but I didn't really have any sort of vision behind it. It was just like, oh, look at this family. They look happy. And yeah. Maybe the solution to a happy family is having
more kids,
you know, more kids or something. Yeah. And so Grace and I got married. We're pretty young. And it was like, well, we definitely don't want kids right away. And then a year later, we're like, well, yep. why don't we, you know, our friends are starting to have kids. And so it's like, well, let's do this. But then we couldn't get pregnant. And that was really hard because, like I said, all our friends are having kids. Then our friends are like having another kid and we're, you know, still trying to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. But through the miracles of both God and science, we used artificial insemination. Grace got pregnant. It was like the second time we tried it. And then like the floodgates opened.
No problem after that?
No. Wow. So whatever wasn't working, you know, started working. And so then, you know, we had three kids in less than 2.5 years and then three more over the next 6 years. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, and I think, you know, my vision, as a father, it's morphed before it was like, oh, well, you know, I really like music. So my kids are going to learn these instruments by this age. Mm-hmm. And then it morphed into, you know, really like caring about, do they have a heart for God? What's their character? Mm-hmm. You know, who does God want them to be? And how do we, you know, facilitate that?
Hey guys, did you know we have another podcast called 5 Minute Fatherhood? In it, Jeremy and I take 5 minutes every day to bring you a quick tip or piece of wisdom that will help equip and encourage you on your journey as a father living in God's design as the coach of your family team. Find it or listen and subscribe by searching 5 Minute Fatherhood on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or anywhere else podcasts are at.
Yeah, so that's quite the journey. And by the way, for people who obviously don't know us, so Grace was a student in my junior high youth group back in my youth pastor days. And I grew up with her extended family and her family. And when I was a child, we went to the same church. So we have a long-term connection there. And she's an amazing mother. And when I watch you guys, we spend, you know, a fair amount of time with your family. It's just, I'm, you know, every time we're in Seattle and we've spent, you know, months out there at different occasions. And yeah, I just really the level of like love and intentionality you and Grace have for your kids is really striking. And the way you lead your family is really beautiful. And I'd love just to hear how that's evolved because it's really been, yeah, great to see. And I can tell that, you know, as challenging as it is. I mean, I think one time we were at your house, I think there was like a lice epidemic up camp.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You give our kids like went up to family camp and started came back with lice.
And your kids had this gorgeous hair, all your girls with, it's just, I can't, you know.
I said, let's just shave all their heads. And my wife's like, no way, we're not doing that.
Oh man, you guys are so patient. So anyway, I would love to hear, yeah, what are some things that have been, yeah, milestones on this journey with having all these, having your larger family and how have you guys, what have you learned that has kind of helped you lead this team?
Well, first off, it's nice for you to say that you feel like we're loving good parents. It does, you know, I think I see all the flaws and shortcomings and just like the day in, day out, you know, end of the day and being like, oh, you know, feeling how we like failed or let our kids down. But it's nice to hear. Hopefully our kids are experiencing love. As far as milestones, I think one of the coolest ones has been really over time seeing Grace and I grow as a team. Mm-hmm. Early on, like I've started different businesses. There was even one that was like a partnership with you way back in the day. You know, these e-commerce stores.
Yes, trying to.
And
the hats are cool.
Yeah. No, even before that, the Happy Bunny or whatever.
Oh, like, right, Happy Bunny. That's
and
right.
we get like all this inventory shipped.
Yeah.
And Grace comes down and just like starts helping.
Yeah.
But we were like, it wasn't the way that we wanted it done or something. We were like trying to track inventory, whatever. And it was, there's this like longstanding joke where she'd be like, fine, I'm never helping again, you know? And it was this like terrible combination of my poor communication. And you know, then I would say things the wrong way. And then she'd be like, fine, I'm never helping, you know? But over time you know, I feel like we're a pretty good team. There was this, even some friends of ours, someone was having a baby, and Sammy Benno, she mm-hmm. puts together this like baby decathlon thing where a whole bunch of different couples each did these different things. It was like putting a diaper on a doll and then running and doing something. I can't remember. It was like a whole bunch of different little tasks.
Like with an infant, like a child or...
It wasn't with a real kid. It was with dolls and just all these silly games. And it was all timed.
Oh, geez.
And both Grace and I are like, we better not lose because we feel, I feel like
experts. This is the one game we can win.
I feel like, you know, if nothing else, we work pretty well together and it didn't, I guess my point is it didn't come naturally. Mm-hmm. I think it's just been the amount of time.
Yeah.
Because I work from home and we've had six kids, you know, we had six kids and whatever it was, like 9 years. I say that, like, as far as diapers, I've changed my thousands and Grace her tens of thousands. Like, we've like...
So many.
You know, I feel like we work well together. That's been a big, you know, it's really cool because we have a lot of years left.
Well, and I've noticed that too over the years, you working from home, you know, you trying to protect some amount of, you know, time so that you can focus on the job, but you're there to help, you know, the little crisis has happened, you jump in, like there's a really cool dynamic you guys have developed there at the home.
Yeah, I think we can become aware of where the other person's at. And there's this weird thing where like, if one of us is stressing out, the other person seems to be cool as a cucumber, you know? So if I'm like freaking out, she's like, why don't you just go to a coffee shop, you know, get some work done. Or if I can tell, be like, hey, you know, I'll watch the kids, go to a coffee shop, go to the gym, whatever. And kind of like take over for each other. I feel, you know, I'm sure not everyone has that flexibility, but it's been cool seeing us develop over 15 years now.
I love that, by the way, just that, you know, that emotional sort of connection and awareness and being a team. You guys are getting reps all day, most days of the week, you know, in that because of the environment. How long have you worked from home? I mean, has it been basically the whole time you guys have been married?
Yeah, that's awesome. Got really, really fortunate in that way, and it's worked really well. And honestly, like, I would sacrifice a lot of income to have that time.
It seemed like over time it became more and more of an intentional decision on your part.
Yeah.
You guys deciding that this works for us. This is how we're going to build a bigger, stronger family. And we're going to get through this season that's so physical, right?
Yeah.
Having all those little kids.
And we'll talk if there's a season where I say like, hey, I really think I need to be doing this project over the next 3 months. I'm going to be, you know, and if she's supportive of it, then, you know, she'll know what we're getting into. But in general, try to be pretty available.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. What other milestones have
I think the biggest one to me was getting into counseling. So here's kind of the backstory. Hanging out with my buddy Drew Goodmanson down in San Diego, and sure. I knew that he and his wife were in counseling. I'm like, yeah, what's the deal? And he's like, Drew's brilliant. Very successful in business, like a lot of leadership skills. He's planted churches, you know, someone that you think of as like incredibly mature.
Yeah.
And he said, well, you know, in our marriage, there are these things. And like, you know, my wife would do something and it would just set me off. And he's like, I thought I was like, basically I would shut down emotionally and just live in this cognitive world. And he's like, describing it more and more, and I'm freaking out inside because what he's describing is like me to a core. And I had all these excuses of like, oh, well, that's just how I'm made. I'm not a feeler, you know? And I'm realizing I'm terrified of my emotions. And so I was like, well, this seems like something I should, you know, look into. And I knew a really like godly man that I would say like, you know, as far as in Ephesians talks about gifts God gave the church, and one of them is pastors, and pastors like a shepherd. Yeah. A shepherd takes care of the needs of a sheep, you know. And so to me, it's this like really important spiritual gift that I was completely lacking.
Like, yeah.
had no, I didn't even know this gift existed. And I just assumed I was super mature in a way where I was completely immature. And so, you know, I met and explained it to this guy, and he's like, you know, basically helped me understand that I have like no emotional thermometer. That if something makes me feel something, you know, it's like going from 0 to 100 degrees, and my way of dealing with it is like shutting off. So other people's way of dealing with it is flipping out, you know, flying off the handle. And I thought I was mature because I don't fly off the handle, but I shut off. And that's just as destructive to my marriage and to my kids. So, you know, like learning that, and also like starting to face shame, you know, realizing, well, one of the, like, I would say for men, the scariest emotion is shame. That's why we all need to build our kingdoms, because then we don't have to feel any shame. If we build our, you know, if we have success, and, you know, and as I realized, you know, things that made me feel shame, I was like, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I do this to my kids. When they're not acting, especially my son, because he's a boy. He's supposed to act.
Right.
If he's acting in a way that...
You project whatever standards on yourself, even emotional standards.
So when he would like throw a tantrum, you know, at, you know, maybe 7 years old, which is kind of not like a little kid anymore, but he'd start screaming and, you know, crying and like contorting his face in a way that it would, like, I would get really upset. And it was like, how do I stop this immediately, what he's doing? And so I would shame him, you know? And it was like, oh my gosh, like what is this going to produce in him? So, you know, some of those things, and becoming aware of my kids' emotions, and like I talked about before, trying to teach them how to be able to handle their emotions, you know, how to not shut off or to fly off the handle. But to be aware of it and to, you know, take the time to calm down and face what they're feeling and be able to, you know, share that. So that's been a big milestone.
Well, yeah, to your point about shame, I mean, you think about how, you know, there's sort of like a double resistance to this, I find, in the Christian world, right? You have the resistance of, well, maybe men don't need this, right? We don't need to have counseling if we're successful at any level. Then there's the Christian sort of struggle with counseling or with going deep into sort of this emotional space, which isn't God or the gospel just supposed to heal us perfectly and make us whole? And so I could feel shame because I'm a man. I could feel shame because I'm not being a good father. I could feel shame because I'm not being a good Christian. And so, you know, I think that, like, how have you thought about this spiritual aspect of kind of the counseling journey, and also, you know, how you think about that as how should a normal dad, they think, well, I wait till there's a sort of a huge problem, or I'm curious how you process
that.
Man,
I'm so glad I didn't, you know, wait till it was a bigger, bigger problem. But I think, you know, just, I think it's hard for men to admit that we need that help. Like, I just, it's so rare to hear someone like preemptively, you know, but it's like, it makes sense to us with all the other gifts, you know, like, oh, well, I need like the teaching gift. I listen to good teachers of the Bible, and, you know, I expect them to like study and mature their gift. And, you know, with other gifts, you know, we could go to a training about evangelism or, you know, whatever, but that's like pastoral. It's like, no, I don't really need that. But to me, like spending the time with, you know, a godly man who was well-trained in this and could help, you know, like, just really, really changed my paradigm. And I'm not saying everyone listening needs to go into counseling, but I would like to see the church grow in providing, you know, it's like this gift is almost like atrophied in the modern church. And so having like mature wise,
well, a lot of us, you know, we inhabit churches that are achieving an industrial scale of, of size and of ministry. And it's difficult, you know, to find people that you think are both mature and that you would trust. And I'd like to dive into how to think about that, because I know that you guys have had experiences like trying to figure this out in mega church environments as well. But what kinds of things do you think a dad should be looking for when, you know, you mentioned one that I think is really critical, which is like, if you're being really self-aware of what's going on in your own heart and you're surprised maybe, and you find that emotions are erupting inside of you that you can't necessarily control, you don't understand the roots of them. Mm. You can start to see the fruit in your kids' reactions. Maybe they may be distancing themselves from you subtly.
Yeah.
That's going to grow over time. I don't know if there's other signals that you would look for, because I think this is a big one to your point. Like, otherwise we're just going to be waiting around for the huge, symptom before we do anything in this area.
Yeah. Well, you know, only 30% of the brain is the part that handles abstraction, which is like critical thinking. And the other 70% of the brain includes the limbic system and things that have to do much, much more with nonverbal. It has to do with experience. And they've even done like these kind of MRIs where they'll poke someone and someone process it with that experience part of the memory before they're like, oh wow, I just got poked. Much earlier than when a child is aware of cognition, they're creating this vast array of experiences, and this limbic system is maturing and developing. And so where am I going with this? Well, basically we tend to think that what we think is our reality, but there's this a larger part of us that is actually non abstraction. So we need to become aware of that.
Yeah.
And God made us so powerfully that we're physically connected to what we're feeling. That informs us of what we're feeling. And the really cool thing is, like, let's say someone hasn't been nurtured well as a child. And so I even think with our kids, you know, when we had 3 kids in 2.5 years, we were, and my dad died, and I was transitioning like what I was doing for work. There were like an incredible amount of chaos. Like, we were not very, and we were young and immature.
Yeah.
So we were not very good. Well, and I don't think that nurturing came naturally to us. So all these things, a couple of our kids really suffered. Like, we weren't very emotionally available to them because of all these factors. Well, the really cool thing is two things. One is that the cognitive part of the brain can actually override that. So what that looks like is you know, maybe you realize like, oh, I'm feeling something really powerful, you know, and they're like, oh man, I'm feeling really scared. Why am I feeling scared? Well, I'm, you know, I don't feel safe. But then to say, you know what? Actually, I am safe. I am loved. You know, I'm loved.
To your cognitive side.
Yes, you can override.
Builds
it.
Faith and
yeah,
truth.
Like yeah. And we know this spiritually. Oh, like, remind ourselves of truths. Oh, well, God loves me. You know, it's like, oh, I don't believe God loves me. Well, we can override it with cognition. We can say God does love me, but we can also say I am. My parents do love me, or you know,
it's got to be transformed by the renewal of your mind.
Yeah.
That Paul talks about in Romans 12. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's and the other thing that's cool. So that's the first thing, is we can override. The second is we can create new experience memory, like you know, it's especially with kids, it's very like spongy, like it,
yeah, it's very conform, yeah, form plasticity of the brain,
yeah,
of that size,
yeah, exactly,
yeah.
So but it starts with, I think a lot of men, we think the cognitive part is the only part that exists.
Well, I think one really practical way that a lot of guys deal with this, I you know, a lot of times you hear about somebody having their first child, and you know, they oftentimes will say, well, I can't wait till they get older. I can kick a ball with them. Yeah. I can play catch with them. I can, you know, for me, even like I tend to be like on the side of, I can't wait to have like a deep conversation with my kids, but that'll, you know, when they're 9 or 10, maybe.
Yeah.
But to your point, by then you've had thousands of emotional experiences with your kids. And if you limit your fatherhood experience, or even where you think that what you think you're offering your child, which, you might be offering them some time as they get older, or some depth of conversation, or for some teaching, but by then they will have learned 1,000 lessons from you about, in that you know, in that side of their development. You know, how do I respond to emotions inside of me, to my anger, to my, that they're watching you from that very, very young. And there's a part of them that needs to feel your emotional reaction. Like they're very affected by it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. There's that really famous study where they found that, how someone feels about someone or, you know, like, so our kids, how they experience us and feel about us. Only 7% of it is the words we say. The other 93% is a combination of how we say the things and our body language. So to, you know, this is practical, is to say, well, what, it's not what I'm saying. It's really like how I'm saying it. And as importantly, my body language as I'm saying these things to my kids. And that was stuff like 5 years ago, I'd be like, no way. It's, you know. And I think that a second thing really to be aware of is to, I've seen a lot of, in myself and in my friends that are like me, there can be this, because we're like the cognitive part is mature and the other part is immature, we can jump to conclusions of we can explain away anything. And I had all sorts of excuses for how I was, why I was the way I was and why it was a good thing. Mm-hmm. So I would say, you know, have people, our blind spots. You said something in there about, you know, in the essay about blind spots. The problem with a blind spot is you don't see it.
Right. You know, you don't see it.
So a real practical thing is to trust your wife's input about how your kids, or even ask, like, how do you think my kids experience me, and like, be okay with hearing it.
Yeah. That's why it's so good there are two of you, you know, like, I mean, it's there are blind spots. That's a great, like, just super practical thing. You know, whatever, like, be open, have conversations. You know, if your wife wants to give, you know, criticize you in some area in a way that would help, you know, constructively.
Yeah.
To say, hey, just so you know, this, I think, well, oftentimes when she'll start to react is when she sees, the impact it's having on the child, and she'll see that first. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know a lot of dads, when you hear this, you know, that shame kicks in, that frustration, that I don't know how to fix this. I just want to be myself. I mean, all these reactions. And, I think one of the things that you're saying here, and I want to like dive into this side of it too. There's an investment that, you know, once you realize that what you need is healing.
Yeah.
Like, I know that a lot of people at that time just throw in the towel because that just is not a path that a lot of people, things have to be really bad for me to pursue that. And I love the way you're kind of framing, hey, do you have access to the pastoral gift? Yeah. If I ask you right now as a father, because there are, you know, little children, you know, that are going to be leading your family generationally that you're impacting deeply right now. Who are you going to have these conversations about what's, you know, how are you recovering from some of the emotional decisions that you've made or damages that you've incurred over the past so that you don't pass those on generationally to your children? Yeah. And do you know who that is? You know, and that oftentimes costs money in these days, right? Yeah. You can't just like, this is a time and money investment. It's not easy to find.
Hey guys, did you know that me and Jeremy created a special fatherhood masterclass we do online called The Skill of Fatherhood? If you want to immediately level up your father's skills and learn an entire system with tips and tricks and philosophy and help that we believe can fundamentally change your family's life forever, then this masterclass is for you. There's an entire module on the skill of training your kids with about 8 teaching videos in that one. There's an entire module you get on the skill of coaching your family as a team on mission with 8 or more videos in that one, including multiple interviews with a bunch of families doing this and how they do that. And an entire module on the skill of building multi-generational legacy and vision for your family with about 7 or 8 videos on that. The masterclass also comes with a workbook that walks you through the process so you never feel overwhelmed but feel equipped and encouraged and ready to start leading your family in a bigger and better direction starting today. And we want to hook you guys up. So our podcast listeners, if that's you and you're listening, we want to give you an exclusive deal that we aren't doing anywhere else online. So if you want to get $20 off the masterclass right now today, then head to familyteams.com and use the code DADS. That's DADS at familyteams.com. Again, that's the code DADS to get $20 off at familyteams.com.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll tell a story that might help with this. So my, my wife's side of the family, both of her parents are the youngest of six kids. So both of her, grandparents are like these patriarchs, you know, what from the outside you say like, oh my goodness, you know, look at this family team, you know?
Yeah.
But, their leadership skills, like basically all of the things that fall into the abstraction and cognition was there.
They were way up. Yeah.
But, you know, there were some weaknesses, some flaws, some things that needed healing on the other side, where there are deep wounds. Mm-hmm. If you talk to my father-in-law and all five of his brothers, those six boys, if you talk to them, some deep wounds from their father, who it's this weird thing where they're like, oh, he was such a great godly man. Yeah. I think we all know that story of this like great godly patriarch, but like what the heck happened?
Yeah.
And I'm saying like, man, there's the cognition, there's the abstraction side, there's the logic and the teaching, but there is another side that's maybe so much larger, you know, that is how do your kids experience you? You know, they see not just, you know, they hear the words coming out of your mouth, but they see the way you're treating them or the way you're not treating them.
Yeah.
The way you're on your phone or that I'm on my phone or, the you know, all those things, they take it in. And to invest in that. And and then when you ask your wife, like, see what you're feeling in your body when she's like, you know, like
she's telling you what's
as she's telling you really things are really hard to hear what's happening. Like, yeah, you're probably feeling shame and like what, how are you going to handle
that? Helpless. I think the helplessness is really hard to deal with.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't know what to do. Yeah. Like, this is what I feel when they say this,
yeah.
You know, like, what do you want? You want a different husband? You want them to have a different father? Like, you can get really defensive and think there's no way out. There's no path to change.
Yeah. And you know, my encouragement is to don't shut down, you know?
Yeah.
And to say, well, hey, you know, like override that and say you are loved. Like your wife loves you, you know, your father in heaven loves you. You have some flaws and, you know, to work on those and to, you know, grow in that area.
And in your case, I mean, you knew and, you know, had somebody that you, you trusted. I know. And in my case, I'm probably like a lot of guys. And I think of this sometimes as the healing path. I've had two major seasons. I really think about, it's important to know what season you're in. Sometimes you're in a building season, but sometimes you need to just sort of like call an audible and say, I need to go right now into a healing season.
Yeah.
And I've done this twice personally where, you know, I'm building things and I'm really trying to advance things. And I'm noticing a lot of ancillary damage that I can't understand how it's happening. Mm-hmm. I know it's coming from me. I know it's coming from like major deep wounds, but I don't know what's going on. So in both of those instances, I, you know, went into a healing path. Mm-hmm. I spent, you know, years building relationship with pastors or going into counseling and just exploring things. And one of the things I remember one time I went into counseling and I said to the guy, I had not met him before. It had been recommended to me. And he's like, well, why are you here? And I said, I just feel like there's too much at stake for me to, not find the areas in my own heart that are broken and seek healing. You know, if not for me, for my kids, for all those who I might lead. And so, one of the things he said to me, you know, was interesting. He said, you know, I was in this particular sort of counseling season, I think I was just turned 40. And he said, you know, he said, I get a lot of men your age, you know, between like 35 and 45. And he said, it's an interesting age because you come to a place in your life where you realize you don't want to live for the rest of your life with, like, you know, there's something that you're young and you're just like a little bit combative and you don't know what it's like to live with your own weaknesses and problems. But over time you get fatigued. You get fatigued of experiencing the damage in your own life. You get, you really, for me, I got really concerned about possibly passing this on to my kids. And this is just good, hard generational work. Yeah. Like your dad did, you know, hard generational work. Your mom did hard generational work and not passing on what they experienced to you guys. But they left a lot of things undone, like all of our parents do. And then we have hard generational work and our kids will have hard generational work. But this, for a lot of us, for a lot of people listening to this, it's going to take a skilled pastor to help you get through this?
Well, I'd say, you know, I'm a big advocate of the spiritual gift of shepherd or pastor, you know, and someone qualified that can bless you and your family with that gift. But there's also a little bit of a secret that this counselor guy that I met with said, which was, Colin, 80% of the benefit of what I do is sitting with people, having them share their shame and them experiencing no shame from me. Hmm. Wow. So to be able to, sit down with this man and say, like, these are the things I've done, these are the things I've felt, these are things I've thought. Hmm. And for him to sit across the couch from them, look them in the eyes with no shame, you know,
yeah.
And to even say, hey, there's no guilt, you know, don't give yourself guilt, you know, like that is, as you know, he says, that's 80% of the work of what he does. And so, it doesn't need, I mean, I think there's this gift, the spiritual gift. And if you have access to it, that's amazing. But having just people in your life, probably especially men, mm-hmm. that you can be vulnerable with, and you know that they're not going to shame you. They're not gonna be like, knock it off, Jeremy, you know, like, stop being a jerk.
Less of the exhorter gift or the teacher gift, but more of that pastoral,
yeah, like, someone mercy that, or something. Well, yeah, because if they make you, then you just might shut down again.
That's
you know,
right.
Rather than someone that can hear you and maybe say, well, you know, here are some things you might try, but someone that can just be, like, sit in it with you and make you get healing from, I mean, shame, it's Adam and Eve, right? Like, it's the initial root internal. Like, that's there's right. the external sin, then there's the internal, is that they felt shame. And it's been like,
yes,
you know.
It's the sin that the Bible, like you saw the foreshadowing Genesis 2, they were naked and felt no shame. And then the first thing it says about their internal state was that they felt shame.
Yeah.
We've been trying to come up with coping mechanisms to deal with that ever since. And without having someone who, because I think there's two ways to overcome shame. One that's actually not healthy. Another that is what I think what you're describing. The unhealthy version of overcoming shame is to say, you know, you have nothing, there's nothing in what you're doing to be ashamed of, which is not what we're saying. What we're saying is because of the gospel, because Jesus paid the price, because of the story that we're all in and we're covering from, we can freely share our actual sins that are actually damaging mm-hmm. others and that are actually shameful mm-hmm. and not mm-hmm. have shame be the thing that not be the response, but to feel loved, to feel forgiven, to feel healed. And you know, before the cross, I don't know how that could have happened, but because of what Jesus did, like that healing's available to us.
And when I think of Jesus, I think of him spending time with prostitutes and tax collectors and them experiencing no shame from him. Like they knew he didn't approve of being prostitutes and tax collectors.
Right.
But I picture that the way they experienced him, he was like, go and sin no more. But it wasn't this making them feel, you know, like what was the path that led to this girl becoming a prostitute or this guy becoming a tax collector? You know, probably some messed up stuff going on.
Right.
And that they could experience him and say, like, I love you. I don't care about your past, you know?
And then
we get to be that community that can hear each other's like failures and like deepest, darkest weaknesses and flaws and say, yeah, you're forgiven. Mm-hmm. Like, I love you,
man. I love that. Well, that's huge. I love that. That's a huge milestone in your fatherhood journey. And I think a lot of dads, especially that are starting out and maybe haven't seriously considered that path. I would say virtually every father that I've ever met, you just need to sign up for seasons of pastoral ministry. Mm-hmm. And you're important. I mean, you are leading a family team. How you feel, how you're emotionally responding to your children, and how you're growing is important for your own life, and it's important for your family. So, yeah, what are other milestones or other big wins for the Jones family?
I think the other one that I think of is that this started about 3 years ago, and it kind of coincided with when we were able to pay off all of our debt, and I think that I had set up in my mind, like, my number one goal for our family, you know, other than, you know, discipling my kids, loving them, and my wife, is like, get out of debt, get ourselves ahead financially. And then when that moment happened, it was like, oh crap, you know, and I don't want to like just give, you know, I don't want to become greedy and selfish. I don't want to teach that to my kids. And so I kind of like decided, you know, our family is going to be committed to these three things, which is giving generously, and like, what are those things that we're called to? And for me, it really started with, I'm so selfish. If I don't like write this down and communicate it to my wife and kids, I'll find excuses to not give. Mm.
So you felt like you had to actually make an intentional plan, or how did you?
I'm such a, like, I'm so goal oriented, you know, I can come up, well, we need this goal, you know, like, oh, well, you know, which those goals are not untrue, which is like, I want to set my like kids up to not have, I don't want my wife and I to be a drain on them financially when we're older. And I want to, you know, help them pursue what God's made them to do. But it's like, if I don't start being generous now, it's not going to happen. So, you know, we just are called to a few things, and it's like, kind of like rally as a family around those things.
You actually try to lead and communicate this to your kids, even the young kids, about what you guys are giving to.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit more about that. How do you guys do that?
Well, I mean, there are three things like specifically right now that we're feeling called to. One is basically a discipleship in India. It's like the gospel is exploding there, you know, and there's really limited resources. You know, here in the U.S., it's usually not financial resources that are the issue, but there
it is. That's where it really pays off.
That's my understanding. And and our neighbors are connected, you know, that's been, he like retired early and has just partnered with the disciple making, you know, movement in India for the last 15 years. And so that's one thing. And then another, my parents built this feeding center in Guatemala, and it just feels like kind of like part of our heart is there. So, and then more recently we got inspired, a friend of ours for her 40th birthday, she made the goal to raise $40,000 to stop child trafficking. And she even like flew over to the country, where this company World Concern is partnering to try to stop. And a lot of it's literally parents that can't afford to not sell their kids into sex trafficking.
Does it financial?
Yeah. It's like, which is horrific as an American. Like, I just cannot even imagine.
Yeah.
So she set this goal. She exceeded it. Mm. She got in the news, all this stuff. And it was like, man, like that is, you know that saying, if you don't have a bigger vision, you're going to live for a lesser vision.
That's right.
And this was like, oh my gosh.
That's a big vision.
That's a big vision. So they do this like 5K. And so for the last couple of years, so we've, you know, that's something that's just like, and our kids do lemonade stands to raise money for this 5K.
Wow. I get asked all the time by dads, like, I got little kids. How can we be outwardly focused? Is this just a time we're just totally inward? And
So that's where I feel like at least once a year. So the one is giving generously. The second is like serving as a family.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're getting close to the point where I could, with our oldest three, we could like volunteer at a soup kitchen or something like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're just kind of getting there. But it started with, we went to Guatemala with my mom, you know, and I hadn't been there since my dad had passed away. And so we went there, and, you know, people are like, oh, you took your kids to a third world country. And we're like, well, yeah, otherwise, you know, it actually had a big impact on me when I was in junior high and high school going on mission trips. And you know, like the way I always think about it is, when I came back from this mission trip, those like $100 Nikes didn't seem so necessary. You know, when all these kids have no shoes. And I just want my kids to experience that, and to at least once a year have an experience. I'd love it to be more than once a year, but so far it's been once a year to say, hey, this has nothing to do with us. This has to do with like serving. Mm-hmm. And in that process, we will be blessed, but we're not, you know.
Yeah.
And then we went to India with four of our kids, and that was a really good experience. We went for a couple of weeks. We did prayer walking in like Muslim villages, and you know, we worshiped with the church, you know, these, they call them church planters. It's like men and women that are just like in their little village are just telling everyone about Jesus. And praying for miracles, and miracles happen, and like these you know, so we got to worship with them and our kids, you know, so many questions we were able to talk about with our kids. And then we've done this 5K the last couple of years, because when we had our sixth, it was like, we're not a place really to travel internationally right now.
Yeah.
But our kids rally around it. Yeah. And I need it too.
Yeah.
You know, it's for our kids, but it's really as much for my wife and I to get outside of like our, oh my gosh, this is what we need.
Well, I think, you know, I think you've intentionally looked around and saw close by, you know, stories or like your neighbor who's involved in India, like here's a place where we can really invest. And I think that, you know, there is a vision. I know that you share this, that as your kids get older and as your resources continue to multiply and as time and energy grows, we expect to just explode out of our households into a much more externally facing opportunity. Our family is starting to get to do more and more of that. It's exponential if you lay the right foundation. But in those foundational years, when you're exhausted, changing thousands of diapers, and you got to kind of look around and say, hey, is there something that we can get behind as a family? How do we make sure that at least in a microcosm, we have an expression that our family's investing in and rallying around that's external.
Yeah.
And it's demonstrating to ourselves, our kids, hey, we exist for healing and serving the world, not just for ourselves. That's huge.
Yeah. And just committing to it, you know, because if you don't, you're the tyranny of the urgent. And then the third thing that, you know, 3 years ago, third thing was like, we need to do this is just like discipleship. How are we doing that? And it really has been our discipleship has been pretty inwardly focused the last couple of years.
And you had seasons where you've had so many people live with your family, you've poured into people. And then now that you're at six kids, it's like time to be a little more focused on, talk to me a little bit about the transition. Cause I know it's been.
Yeah. We used to do a lot of, you know, discipleship stuff, have people over and take them through discipleship, you know, storeform life and things like that. And having people live with us, and we've had really good seasons of that, but we kind of, maybe it was 2 or 3 years ago, realized our kids were really getting neglected in that. And so we need to step back and really make sure that their hearts are being, you know, stewarded you know, what our neighbors, they're like our rock in this season, because their kids are out of the house, and you know, so basically a lot of our, other than discipling our kids, whatever they're doing, you know, so we do Taco Tuesday, and if they're doing a Bible study or whatever, it's like, great, we'll just do that. We don't really have a lot of energy to be pouring out right now. But
Taco Tuesday, what's that?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Been every Tuesday for like 5 years.
Yeah. With you with and our neighbors.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And during different seasons, there've been other people that have,
like, do you go back and forth to houses? Like, just
no,
tell
it's always
what's
their
the detail?
House.
So they set up tacos and you guys just invade, or how do
so they always do the meat.
Okay.
And they usually provide the tortillas.
Okay.
And, you know, there might be other things. This you should be asking my wife, because she knows the specifics. But she does like the beans
details.
And olives and cheese and lettuce and
so a bunch of the sides you guys take care of. And
yeah,
then they
we
do
all carry
the
them over,
parts, and then you just converge on.
Yeah.
In 5 years, you guys have been maintaining this.
I think so.
That's awesome.
It's been a while. It's really good. You know, we get that connection with them, and it, during different seasons, it's been, you know, Bible studies or inviting neighbors that don't know the gospel and having them be, you know,
do other people sometimes come to the,
in different seasons. Yeah. It's been different, but it's always Tuesday and it's always
tacos.
Yeah. And there's the occasional like, hey, we have some leftover hamburgers and hot dogs. Let's do that. But it always comes back to tacos.
Nice.
So sometimes we have hamburgers on Taco Tuesday.
There you go.
But it's still Taco Tuesday.
That's right. That's stuck. That's great. Yeah. Well, that's awesome, Colin. Now, this has been a really, really interesting conversation. I love getting to hear from the season that you guys are in with, you know, now with six and having really externally focused seasons, having kind of healing seasons, having internally focused seasons with your family. And I think this is going to be really helpful for a lot of people. But before we go, I would like to, we have our lovely producer, Kelsey Joy Pryor here. And wondered if you had any questions that you'd like to ask Colin.
Okay. Hi, Colin.
Hi.
So going back to when you were talking about the gift of pastoring, I was wondering if you have identified any spiritual gifts in your kids at the young age that they're in, especially if it's like pastoral, if you're like, oh, I see like that part of myself in them. And if so, if you've identified either pastoral or anything else, like if you've found ways to be like, help them use it or bring that out, or if it's too young and you're just kind of watching them see how they use it, anything in that area if with your kids?
It's a really good question. Not specifically. I know my son is a lot like me, but a lot more emotionally mature than me, at least me at that age, you know? And so I want to nurture that. You know, a few of my daughters are like really, really sweet and, you know, encouraging and like quick to help someone out. And it's like a huge, huge blessing to our family. But man, that's really something I should be, you know, asking myself more and keeping an eye on to see how that matures and, or what gifts mature in each of my kids.
Yeah. Cool.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Colin, and welcome to Cincinnati. I hope you're excited that you're going to get to be in our city. It's been too long, for the next 3 days, and hopefully we get to see you out in Seattle. But thanks for sharing with all these dads some of your thoughts and your journey tonight.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
All right, guys, that's all we have for today's episode. Remember, you have what it takes as a father equipped by the Holy Spirit to lead your family as a multi-generational team on mission. And as always, remember to let us know what you thought about today's episode at Family Teams on Instagram, at Family Teams on Facebook. Search for us there, easy to find, and you will find us. And let us know what you thought, whether something that stood out, something that was encouraging, or some feedback you would like to give us. All right, have a great rest of the day.